Welcome to the Mary Valone Show. I'm your host, Mary Valone, and you're listening to episode 41. Today's episode is part three of our seven-part series, and today's part three is all about how do I enlist my team. I hope you guys have been enjoying this seven-part series as we dig into fundraising freedom and we talk about what is fundraising freedom and how can I get it. And as many of you know, I came out with a book earlier this year called Fundraising Freedom, The Seven Steps to Build and Sustain Your Next Campaign. And these seven steps are really the steps that I pulled together after raising over $500,000 with a first-year event. And since that time, that happened in 2009. And since that time, I've been working with nonprofit leaders from around the country and around the world who are raising funds. And in all those scenarios, I have been talking them through the seven steps. So all my coaching clients, the people that I work with on the consulting side, my group coaching clients, we are working through these seven steps. And I believe that no matter how big or how small your organization is, that these steps work. And to be honest with you, I think that they work way beyond our nonprofit work, and they also work in our any type of goal that you're trying to create or you're trying to achieve. I actually use these same steps to build my business. So that's how Mary Valone Consulting came about, was really because of these seven steps. So I love that I get to share them with you, and I hope that the tips that I give you and just the process in general help you along the way as you're building out this vision that you have for your organization and the vision that you have for the goals that you have ahead. So today we are talking about our team. We're talking about enlisting our team. And this is where really the goal comes to life. This is where that vision and the mission start to come to life, because now it's instead of just you, you now have another person that you're looking to bring on to your team. And then you, from that other person, then you bring on an entire group. And from there, sky's the limit on how many people you can impact and who you can engage in sharing the mission of your cause. So to jump in today, you know, the one person that we're looking to find is really somebody who's very much like a team captain. So if this were a sporting team, you would be looking for your team captain, who is going to be the person that people will look to as a leader for your group, who's going to be the most energetic and enthusiastic, the most passionate. And just to let you know, the person that may be the best team captain for your organization and for your whatever it is that you're creating, whether this is an advisory group or a committee for an event, this is the same thing. We're building out whatever you call it. It might just be a little bit different, but it's all the same. The structure is the same that we're trying to create. So, but this person right now may not even know that your cause exists. They may not even know that you need help and that they're even the right fit for the job. So I really want to teach you guys how to find this one, how to find this one person who can really be a champion for your cause and be that team captain. So, you know, just recently I was speaking at a conference, and right when we were starting the conference, a lady walked in, and my heart was just so happy because the lady who was walking into this room was one of my very favorite volunteers. She actually was a lady that came in right after me when I was working for Special Olympics. And she sat through my entire session at this conference. And afterwards, we were sitting at lunch together, and she says, "Hey, I'm your number one. I am that person. I'm that one volunteer, that team captain." I was like, "Yes, you are." And it was just so fun to see her identify herself as that lead volunteer. And there were a couple other ladies that were at the table with us having lunch together. And I just flat out said, I'm like, "This is what a lead volunteer looks like. And here this lady had taken her own money to come to this conference so that she could learn how to be a better leader for her cause. I mean, nobody was forcing her to be there. She wanted to be there because she wanted to be a better volunteer. And, you know, she often says that she's a professional volunteer. I have so many friends who have come up through organizations who I would give them that same title, a professional volunteer, the person who is, I mean, they just champion causes and they're so good at it because they get how the community wants to be a part of your cause, and they get, you know, how to really present your organization in a better way. And so some of these lead volunteers, they know exactly why they were recruited and why they're in the position. So it was really cool. It was neat because when she handed me her business card too, it had, you know, I mean, they called her an ambassador, but it was really neat because I'm like, you had your own business card. And I even said, I'm like, oh my gosh, your organization is doing such good work, because they got it. They understood that they needed to empower this woman to be a leader for the organization. And so it was just so cool to see her, you know, I mean, I hadn't seen her in so many years. Because I work for Special Olympics right out of college. So that would have been nearly 15 years ago. And so it was pretty cool. I mean, I loved having that conversation with her, and her during my session being able to identify in this specific chapter that this was her. So once again, hey, if you have access to my book, Fundraising Freedom, I just wanted to let you know we are in chapter 3, which is on page 39. So if you do want to come along in the book with us, that's where we're at right now. So chapter 3, and we're on page 39. So as we're talking through this finding your one, you know, who can be this person? Who could be just like this woman that I just mentioned, you know, for your cause? And it doesn't have to be a female. It doesn't have to, you know, like there's no particular criteria for this person other than the fact that they are passionate and they're somebody that would align well with your cause. So in the book, I give lots of different reasons why somebody wants to be a part of a cause. Just a few of them so that you kind of have a gauge is, you know, people in general as volunteers want to give back. You know, they want to build new friendships. They want to meet new people. You know, they're looking to make a difference. And, you know, they're looking for contacts maybe if they're in a business. And they just do it because someone asked them. You know, oftentimes when I talk to these lead volunteers, they never would have considered themselves qualified necessarily, or that they would be the person who would be serving in this role. But somebody believed in them enough to invite them to serve in this position. So today, whoever this person is that's out there, they really have no idea that they could be capable of doing some of the things that you could give them the ability to do. And usually it's just because they don't have the platform. They don't have the title. They don't have the ability to put their name on your cause, on a cause like yours. And so I've said this, you know, before, that even if you're a one-person organization, if you're one person who's raising a budget, this is for you too. You know, building out this team, advisory group, committee, some sort of a council, you can call it whatever you want, but give it a name, give it a title, and look for one person who really is like almost like the example for everybody else to follow. And we want to make sure that whoever we put in our leadership positions, that they are such rock stars at their ability to serve your cause that others want to follow them. Others want to be just like them, and they want to, you know, emulate what it is that they're doing. So this lead volunteer, you know, ideally is somebody who has some time on their hands. They've got, maybe their spouse works, and so they don't have to. Maybe this is, a lot of times I know we look to women because if they're moms, or they've got, you know, time on their hands because they're, you know, focused on little kids, and then the kids grow up and now they have an empty nest, so they have more time. For some of the guys, you know, you might be looking at retirement season when they are transitioning out of a career and into, you know, just having something to do with their time, and they still want to make a difference. They still want to be a part of something that's doing great work, you know, where they're able to do great work and leave a legacy. And so depending on what kind of person that you're looking for, if you're targeting a younger audience, I mean, we're just looking at, do they have enough time in their day to where they could maybe, they would be willing to carve out this time for your cause? When I'm recruiting this person, I'm usually sitting down with them. I'm having a coffee. I'm meeting with them face to face, typically. Now, sometimes we're not capable of doing that because geographically we just don't live close. But if you can get in front of them face to face and you've identified that you're like, okay, I know who this person is. I know the person who should be leading this campaign, or should be leading our committee, then I'm going to go find a way to get in front of them. And right now you might not know them. them, you might think, okay, this person would be really great, but I just don't even know how to reach them. Well, you schedule the first meeting with the person who knows them, and you sit down with them and say, hey, I would love to invite this person, you name them, to our organization, to our cause. What do you think? How do you think we should approach them? And now we're being really strategic about how do we get ourselves in front of the right person. If in the book, I talk about this, this scale system that I used and my mentor taught me. And it's really just, you know, we're going off of the letter system, the grading system, to where I want to find somebody who is an A+ volunteer for my cause. A+ means that they have the capacity to give typically, but that isn't always the case. But ideally they have the ability to financially give. They have contacts and connections. They're well-respected. They're excited. They're ambitious. They're goal-oriented. They like to, you know, they might be, you know, like a good challenge. They want to do good work. They want to help people in need. And so you have to determine what does that look like? I mean, if you're, like I mentioned, if you're targeting a younger generation, well, you know, you might be looking at a 16-year-old or a 23-year-old or, you know, somebody in their 30s. Whereas other organizations, if you're looking for a high dollar donor, somebody who has the capacity to give, I'm looking somewhere in the range of that 35, 40, all the way up to 70s, 80s, you know, because I want to be in the prime of their giving years and I want to be their charity of choice. So there's certain, you know, there's an age demographic that I'm looking for because I want to find somebody who has the capacity to give. Now, this isn't the case, like I said, for every organization, for every cause. If you're working with senior citizens, well, obviously, I don't want a 20-year-old who's running the organization. I want senior citizens. I want people who understand my people. So you're going to know what that looks like if you're working a pet organization, a missionary organization, a church. Who is the person? What's the age? What do they look like? And you're really trying to create somewhat of an avatar. And this is just like, what is my ideal person look like? You know, if I were to have one person stand out in the crowd who could represent the rest of the group, what would they look like? You know, I have been recently working with building out an alumni association. So obviously, I have to be looking for, when I'm looking for the leadership, my one volunteer that I'm looking for, I want somebody who's number one, an alum, and two, somebody who's in the marketplace, somebody who's working a job that, you know, where they have the ability to financially give and they have contacts that are also alumni. So you can start to see that I'm like the kind of person that I'm looking for has, there's certain qualifications in order for them to even be considered for the role. And there's a lot of people who don't qualify. I mean, by saying, hey, I'm building an alumni association, well, that nixes out a lot of people who would not be an ideal volunteer for that position. So you can see that when, you know, and I'm going to continue with this example, is that when I recruited this alumni, we started off with one person. My very first person that we recruited for the position was very much a visionary. You know, that person could see big picture. He understood what we were trying to create. He had a passion and an excitement. He had, at one point in his college years, he was a part of interning with the organization. He traveled on mission trips and was a part of other projects that were going on, but he really understood and wrapped his arms completely around what we were creating. But he also understood that he was the first person to do this. You know, like we had never created this thing before, so he was the first person. Well, he also was kind of sitting side by side with me trying to figure out, okay, well, this is just for a season, but let's keep our eyes on the lookout for who the next person is. So after, I think it was 2 years, we then identified the next person who should lead the group. And now the first guy who did it, he was very much a visionary, like I said. The second person who's now leading it is very much a teacher, you know, like he wants to raise up other people who have the giftings and the strength to pick up and take this to a whole new level. So as you can see, the person who you have in that leadership role at the very beginning may not be the same person who carries it out forever and ever and ever. I mean, you kind of want to have terms, you want to have a set time where this person's leading your cause. And if you're doing an event, well, that's an easy timeline because you do the event every year. So every year we rotate rotate out this leadership position, but this might be a board of directors or an advisory group or something like that. And you want to kind of have an ideal timeline. So is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Is it 1 year? You know, but you do want to rotate out that leadership so that it doesn't, become toxic, because it's easy for somebody to start moving into this position where this is their identity and they have a hard time letting it go. So they take such ownership of it that they just don't even want to bring anybody else in. And that's really, really hard for your future growth. So be aware that the person who you're recruiting for this team, let's set a timeline as far as how long this person is going to serve in this capacity. And you have a specific description about what it is that they're going to be doing with your cause. So I had posted, now I'll probably post along with this video on my consulting page that, or with this podcast, is there's a video on YouTube, and it's basically a guy that's dancing in a field. And I think it's so fitting to describe what this section, this step is all about when you're enlisting your team, is that the first person who gets out and does something sometimes looks a bit crazy. You know, that if you just go stand out in the middle of a crowd and just start dancing by yourself, it kind of is like everybody just looks at you and says, "What are you doing?" And I mean, I think to some extent that might be a lot of us that are listening right now, is that, you know, you might be the one person who's standing out in a field dancing and you're just waiting for somebody else to see you and say, "Oh, I want to dance with you." And so in this YouTube video, this guy's dancing, and then before you know it, another person comes along, and then the rest of the crowd starts to see, okay, they're dancing. Okay. And now all of a sudden this whole crowd of people, this whole group of people, start to gather together. And I was sharing this video actually with my coaching clients, with my group coaching. And one of the guys in our group made a comment about how, if you notice, when you watch the YouTube video, there's actually a guy, there are several people who step out even when other people are coming in. And so this is so very visual when it comes to the kinds of event, you know, like the groups that we're creating. Is not every member of your group is going to stick around forever. And sometimes they come in, they stay for a little while, and then they leave. And that's okay. Like, they don't have to stay forever. But when you're building a team, like the most important person who comes alongside you is that number two. If you look at your number one, you're let's use the same terminology, but let's just say it's you and then the very first person. So your number one, that first person who comes and stands next to you, the person who comes and dances next to you, that's the person who brings the rest of the people along, because they start to look at them. And then before you know it, nobody even knows who the first person was. And that's really what my hope is whenever I start anything, I know that I'm the leader at the very beginning. I'm the person who's driving things to move forward. But eventually, nobody's going to even know who I am. Nobody's going to know anything about what I've done or any of that, because it doesn't matter. And, that same conference I mentioned, you know, where I was, this lady came up and, you know, she identified herself as the lead volunteer. Well, in the same session that I was talking, I had asked the people in this room, if they could raise their hands. Now, I was in a conference, you know, speaking in a session where I'm back at my home, you know, the location where I started my lead event, this event that raised $500,000. So I've been gone now for 4 years. And I asked in the room, I just said, "Hey, has anybody heard of?" And I mentioned the event, and almost every single hand in that room was raised. And here's the thing. I guarantee you that a very, very small percentage of people had any clue who I was, that they didn't know that I was the person who started that fundraising event, and that I was sitting in a room in an office in Springfield, Missouri, just pleading for this number one volunteer to come show up in my, you know, to pick up the phone and get that one person who would help me create this event. But it was, I mean, now it's been, well, 8 years since the event has been running. And of course, everybody in that room knew what the event was, but they didn't know me. And that to me was just so cool. That was when I was like, yes, you know, that is what I was trying to create, is that I don't want anybody to really know who I am. I mean, like, that's okay. My ego will be just fine, you know? And so But it was awesome because when I started out, I really wanted to create something that would last forever. And that's what our volunteers want for the most part. That's, I think, what we want is that we want to create events that are going to be around for a long time. We want to create causes that, you know, that there's sustainability and there's a future for these causes. And we don't have to beg people for their money because this is something that's so amazing and so incredible for people to be a part of. So what's cool is as you enlist your team and you start to identify who the right person is for your group, you know, of course, making the ask is a little bit of a challenge because you do have to figure out a way to get in front of them. And typically that means that you need to go find somebody who knows them and who they respect. You know, so one of the first people that I recruited for, you know, for this event, I mentioned that the lead person, which I talk about in my book, but we also recruited an honorary chairman. So there were multiple layers to the groups that we were creating. So just to give you an idea, so we had the working committee for the event. We had the planning committee for the event, so that executive leadership. So, okay, let me break this down in numbers just so you guys have a good idea. So there was a planning committee of nearly, there was about 100 people who served on the actual planning committee for this event. About 600 volunteers actually were a part of putting on the event. So those were day of volunteers. Those were people who were coming and helping with registration and different parts of the event. So 600 people there, 100 people on the planning committee, about 25 to 30 people who were on that executive planning committee. So those were committee chairmen. And then we had an executive, this was the more of a board that was an advisory group for the event. So an advisory group, which we called the executive barons. And then there was an honorary chairman that came out of that executive barons group. So the honorary chairman kind of served as the chair, the number one for the executive barons group, for this advisory group. Then we had on the planning committee, on the leadership team, you know, there was a chairman for that group. So as you can see, like I was building this enlist your team idea on a variety of different levels. And let's just keep going up the organization. Let's just say we actually see, I was working for such a large organization that there was also an advisory group of volunteers. So once the chairman of these organizations had a successful event, there was an opportunity for them to serve on a leadership team there. And then there was a chairman of that event. There was obviously a board of directors for the organization and a chairman for the board of directors. So there's a lot of different ways that you can utilize this enlist your team idea. And you can bring it down all the way to the point of where these are working committees for every component of your organization. So if you've got a group of people who are running your, you know, your program side, you're most likely going to have a lead volunteer for your program side. So I'll speak to some of my, you know, campus friends who are part of campus ministries, is that you've got a small group leader who is your one. Usually you have the president of your organization and that person is serving as your one. So, but once you start getting into your fundraising, I want you to have a lead volunteer that is specifically coming in from the lens of your finances. Somebody who's looking at how are we going to raise the dollars that you need in order to fulfill your mission. So just think about it. You're already doing it. So most likely, I mean, you're either a part of something. If you're a part of a church, if you're part of a PTA, you're volunteering with your neighborhood association, you are on a team. So you are a part of this team. Somebody asked you to serve in some capacity and you said yes. And so I know we all get this. I just think it's hard sometimes to understand how does this fall in line with fundraising? And it's no different. It's really no different. The thing is that you create what you want to create in order to raise the funds that you need. So if you need an advisory group, if you need a board of directors, if you need a planning committee for your event, if you need a working committee for some sort of gathering that you're doing, you come up with the name. It's all in your hands. You can create whatever it is you want to create. And but you need one person who can come alongside you. So I hope that that all makes sense, because I think sometimes we get confused that, well, what I'm talking about in fundraising freedom is only about events. And that is not true at all. I mean, building campaigns, capital campaigns, all of those different kinds of fundraisers, they all have a lead volunteer. They all have a leader. What I'm trying to get you to understand here with the Enlist Your Team is that I don't want you to get locked into that your staff should be your team. No, your staff is a team. It is a team, but it is not your fundraising team. So you are on staff and you have a specific role to be a representative of your organization and of your cause. So you are the keeper of a lot of information that a volunteer cannot get, but that does not mean that you forego having a volunteer who's leading your cause. Because number one, they don't get paid. I mean, they don't get paid, so they are respected more. They are out in the community, they're buying and purchasing items, they have influence in different areas that you could never have influence in because you are doing and running your cause. So I hope you can see here that your volunteers have access to things and they have information that you could never bring to the table. So they are very, very special to your cause. And if you don't invite the right person to the table, your cause will suffer. And so I want you to take away from today's conversation that this one volunteer, this lead volunteer, is essential. Because I know so many people just say, oh, it's so much work. I don't know how to bring them on. I don't know what I would ask them to do. Well, what is your vision? I mean, this one person is aligning next to you to fulfill your vision for your cause, for you personally, for whatever it is that you're working on. And like I said at the beginning of our call, you know, our podcast today, is that I mentioned that I use this for my business. Well, what do you think was my conversation when I was recruiting my lead volunteer for this? And by the way, my lead volunteer, you know, I don't know if you would appreciate me saying this, but you know, my primary lead person when it comes to my business is my husband. You know, so he's the one that I'm running ideas by. He's the one where I say, okay, what do you think about this? And I know sometimes I drive him crazy, but the thing is that he's passionate about it. You know, he's here to help me along the way. And but that is my business. When it comes to my nonprofit organizations, I would never, never, ever, ever recruit my husband. Okay. So, and that's just purely because he doesn't have a passion for that. You know, he has a completely different passion when it comes to his business and his work, you know? So, but if you are working in ministry and you are on a team with your spouse, well, very well, this very well could be that your lead volunteer is your spouse. But when you're building out something where you're raising a lot of money, you're looking towards somebody who is outside of the circle, somebody who can see so differently than you do, and they can bring information to the table that will divert what direction you go in. Because they'll help you see that, okay, that's not the way, when you wrote that information on a sheet of paper, well, I didn't read it that way. You know, I read it like this. And honestly, I just sent over material in the last couple of days over to my lead volunteer for one of the organizations I work with. And I mean, she looked through that thing and she tore it apart. And when I got it, oh, my heart was so happy, because that's what I need. I don't need somebody to say, oh, looks good, looks good. I need somebody who says, you know what, when I read that, this is what I thought. And when I looked at that, you know, I think we should change this because we could get more people, you know, and all those, that information was all coming in because she was coming from a donor perspective and I'm coming from a staff perspective. So I hope that all, you know, sits with you, because you need this person. And number one, you have to just come down to, what do I need? What is going to be my first thing that I'm going to target? Is it an advisory group for my mission? And what does this one person really look like? What is the criteria? If I had one person who is really representing our cause well, who would it be? And like I said, you may or may not know this person right now, and you've got to work your way back to go figure out how you're going to get a meeting with them. And so once you do get into this meeting and you're ready to enlist this number one person for your organization or your personal mission, You want to be prepared. You want to come in. You want to have a job description. What does it mean? How frequently are you guys meeting? You know, when I mentioned a committee and stuff like that, well, my committee met every single month, once a month, every single month. And then they met with their working committee once a month. So there were certain qualifications. When I was recruiting that person, I was looking at, okay, they want to know how much time, what does it mean? If I say yes to this, what does that mean? And so you want to be ready with the answers to that. So I do recommend pulling out, grabbing a Word document and just jotting down some bullets on, you know, what is the role? So let's just say it's an advisory group chairman. Well, I want to have that at the top of the sheet of paper. I want my logo prominently displayed, and I want to say what it is that I'm asking this person to do. Bullet it out. I want to know, you know, that this person is going to be the leader of this group. They're going to be the point person, you know, that they're willing to give their name and their voice to the cause. They're a representative of the organization. They're already supporting the cause. You can kind of just jot down different ideas on what you think would be, you know, really when you're talking to them, what do I want this person to do so that others will follow? And if you start with your number one volunteer, set very clear expectations, every other volunteer will follow their lead. So if you mess up right here and you don't give them the right criteria, you just say, hey, it doesn't really matter. I'll take anybody, warm butt in the seat. I don't really care. And you just frivolously throw this position out there to someone, they fill it. Well, I guarantee you for years and years to come, you will have a poor leader serving in this position. Because an A-plus volunteer will recruit an A volunteer, a B volunteer will recruit a C volunteer. And if you catch my drift, is that if you start off with a volunteer who's at a C level, they will have influence over their peers and the people below them, and you will continue to see a decline in the leadership of your team. So do not start square one. If you're building this from the ground up, do not start with a C-level volunteer. You need to find an A-plus volunteer who's really going to be a great representative for your cause. So if you have further questions, I feel like this little conversation that we've had today, this episode is essential. You know, I know I say this all the time. Every part of the plan is important. It is. But the number one, this lead volunteer, the team that you build out will be the voice in your community, will be a representative of you. And so no matter who you invite in, if you nominate them and you say, I believe that you're the right fit for this position, I want you to be so confident and kind of feel like this is going to be a bit of a stretch to ask this person because they may be out of my league right now. And that's what you want. I want people who are, that are kind of out of my league and kind of go from there, you know? I'll share one last thing I mentioned just briefly earlier, and I didn't hit on it, but we had an honorary chairman, you know, from our executive team that we wanted to really lead that leadership team, that executive Barron's group that I mentioned. Well, the honorary chairman that we wanted was actually the president of the university in town. And this guy was only, you know, a couple of years in the position. I did not know him. My number one volunteer did not know him either. But we went after somebody that we did know who knew him. And we had this conversation of, we want the president of the university to serve as our honorary chairman. What do we need to do to make that happen? And this gentleman helped us. He wrote a letter on our behalf inviting him to serve as our honorary chairman. And the guy was somebody that this university president really respected. And so he said yes. And just look at that. I didn't know the person. My volunteer didn't know the person, but yet that didn't stand in our way. We sat down and said, this is the guy we need, and we're going to go after him. We're going to go figure out a way to approach him. So if you've listened to previous episodes, I talk more about it, you know, in some of those episodes where we just, you know, talk about just really going after, you know, how do you make the ask? How do you go after them? But really today in this Enlist Your Team episode, how you enlist your team, this is all, you know, just I hope you pull away from the fact that you just need a really great lead volunteer. And then from there, you and that person come up with a game plan as to how you're going to tackle your big goal. So if you've got a big dollar amount to raise, well, now look at how by having a partner in crime, you know, a partner that's coming alongside you, the weight doesn't feel so heavy. And then when you bring on another person, you may say, hey, I want 3 to 5 people on this advisory group. Or, you know, I want, like I was doing, I wanted 30 people on my committee. And I wanted those 30 people to each recruit, you know, roughly, 5 to 10 people to serve on their teams. So as you can see, it didn't take long before we had 100 people that were a part of this team. So whatever you are doing, I mean, come from your perspective. What would it look like if you had 3 to 5 people who came around you and served as the voice for your cause, opening up doors for new opportunities and could give you the feedback and the insight that you need in order to raise more money and to make greater impact? So today, I want you to identify your person. If you already have your person, I want you to start thinking about who that next person could be, and also just thinking about the other members of the team and how you can bring in additional members so that they can also spread your message. So I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Of course, we are going to continue on next week. We're talking about enhancing your brand and how to build out your messaging so that other people understand what you're all about. So join us next week, and I hope you guys have an incredible week. If you need anything, you can find me at maryvaloney.com. Jump into the Tribe page on Facebook, Fundraising Freedom Tribe, or feel free to shoot me an email at mary@maryvaloney.com. Hope you guys have a great week. Go change the world one volunteer and $1 at a time. What could your favorite charity do if money were not an object? Most nonprofit leaders say they know what to do, they just don't know how to do it. What if you had a resource that showed you step by step how to raise the funds you need to fulfill your mission? Hi, I'm Mary Valone, author of Fundraising Freedom, and I've raised millions of dollars for charity, and I'd love to show you exactly how to do it and how to recruit the right team to back you. Fundraising Freedom, 7 Steps to Build and Sustain Your Next Campaign. Available now at maryvaloney.com, amazon.com, and online at all major bookstores. Get your copy and give the gift of Fundraising Freedom to your favorite charity today.